and who work on the school board. Yes.
Recently, she was appointed chairman of a committee on hazardous waste by Elizabeth Dole. Mm. And just came back from a trip to Florida of a group interested in the subject of hazardous waste from all over Europe and this country. Hmm. She gave a talk during that meeting. Will you turn it off for 1 minute? I want to tell you something.
You've told us about some of your grandchildren. There are others that you would like to talk about.
Well, I failed to talk about John's children, Steve and Larry. Steve is now an assistant to David in his office, more or less an office manager. Larry works for Alcoa in their payroll department, in spite of the fact that he is completely deaf. And Alcoa seems very proud of the fact that they have employed a couple of deaf people in their office.
Would you like to talk?
Neither of the boys, both the boys are married. But neither of them have any children.
Would you like to go on to the Tennessee grandchildren?
Yes. No, wait, I wanted to see if there was anything further about their children. Oh, Steve's wife is studying to be a registered nurse. Larry's wife is partially deaf herself.
Is she also employed? Is she employed also?
Yes. I believe she works in the office of Giant Eagle. Now we'll talk about Barbara's family. Four boys and a girl. The oldest one, Rick, short for Richard, is an assistant city manager for a suburb of Memphis called Germantown. After working in a similar position in Oak Ridge for a number of years. He is unmarried. The second boy, William, studied law. His wife was a teacher and continued to teach while he was in order to help him through law school. He is now an assistant U.S. attorney in Chattanooga. He has two sons, Bill Jr. and Mike, age 5 and 3, whom I just saw last week in Memphis myself. Is it part of, turn it off for a minute. Is it, maiden name was Earlene Parker. She tells a story that her parents were so anxious for a, very anxious for a boy. When she turned out to be a girl, they still named her after her father, whose name was Earl.
How about this?
Yes. All right. Yes. While we're talking about your family, your wife had a very distinguished cousin, the great scientist Robert Oppenheimer. Do you have some memories of him and the times you spent?
Yes, but let me finish about the family and then we'll talk. Can't we then talk about Robert?
If you prefer, sure.
Okay. You got it turned on or off?
It's going.
Okay. The second son, the third son, rather, is John. John worked for his father as a sanitary engineer and now lives in Houston. Married a very lovely girl named Penny Ahlberg, A-H-L-B-E-R-G, a Texas girl. He's a construction engineer today. They have one child, a year old, and another one on the way. The fourth son, Roger, works for the Miles Laboratories in Elkhart, Indiana. He married a very lovely girl named Teresa. And they have one son, David, whom I have nicknamed the genius. Mm-hmm. I just saw him last week and he's amazing. At the age, well, he isn't 2 years old yet, he knows the alphabet. His grandmother gave him some playing cards and he can tell you the name of each, all the cards.
Precocious little boy.
Really precocious.
Yes.
They live in Indiana, as I've said. The fifth child is Peggy, who's a businesswoman, approximately 25 years old. Very lovely girl, but not married yet. They were all together except John's family for Thanksgiving. And it was really quite an occasion. Now you want to talk about Robert?
Please.
All right, you asked your question.
Yes. One of your wife's very distinguished cousins was the scientist Robert Oppenheimer, and I wondered if you might tell us about your memories of him.
Robert's parents, his mother was my mother-in-law's sister, Ella, Ella Friedman, whose father came over shortly before the Civil War. And who unfortunately died when Ella was just a baby. She was the loveliest woman I have ever known. Robert was naturally a brilliant student at Harvard and then again in Germany. I forget the name of the university, it may have been Göttingen, where he studied science and later became a professor at Trinity it off for a second. With the, became a professor of physics at Stanford.
Right, he did.
I don't need to tell him anything about his work in developing the atom bomb. That's too well known.
Did he talk?
After the war, he was made head of the of an institute, the name of which I'm not certain, in Princeton. He used to visit us on Inverness Street when we lived there. I remember once his bringing in a little slide of a new atomic particle called a meson, which had just been discovered.
Did he talk about his work when he visited, or about those years of hard work and anguish?
We saw him a few times in Princeton, but he never talked very much about his work at Oak Ridge or about the difficulties that his brother had.
Did you know his brother as well?
No, not as well.
Can you, for the record, since everyone may not know, talk a bit about Robert Oppenheimer's contribution, which was enormous to the history of this country.
See, the researcher might like to know that he started Los Alamos, that Robert Oppenheimer was sent to Los Alamos, which was a wilderness, and he started the whole establishment to develop the atom bomb, which was never heard of or invented yet. And I think if you could say a few words about that, it would establish who he is to the researcher. Don't you think?
I don't. What can I add to what's already been written about Robert?
Your own feelings about him, your pride in the man.
And maybe some information that no one else knows but you, because you did know him intimately compared to some historian who may have never had the contact. Get it? Any little...
Did I mention the story about Robert and Salk at my mother-in-law's?
No, that would be very
precious.
Valuable. Please.
Absolutely.
The last, we visited him in Princeton a few times. The last time I remember, he's coming back from New York where he had just been treated for cancer, which not long after that killed him. My wife and I drove down to Princeton for the ceremony, which was not a religious ceremony, where some very famous scientists attended and spoke about Robert.
Do you remember who some of them were?
Yeah, I have the... If you turn it off a minute, I'll try to find it.
You were going to tell us a story that involved Oppenheimer and Salk. Can you?
Oh, yes.
Yes, would you go back to that?
When my mother-in-law was 90 years old, Robert and Jonas Salk came to see her on her birthday. Jonas Salk had bought her house, and he became so fond of her that he started calling her Grandma. Well, Robert and Jonas were having a very interesting conversation, which incidentally led to their doing some work together afterwards, which I don't know anything about. The old lady fell asleep during this very interesting conversation.
Do you remember the conversation?
No.
Do you remember the subject?
No.
Can you perhaps describe for us the kind of man
Robert
Oppenheimer was?
Was a man of very, very refined taste. He was a connoisseur of wine, for instance, and of many other things. I can't say that he was a very outgoing man or a very jolly man. He was certainly an interesting man to be with. But I don't remember his ever talking too much about his work at Los Alamos. I think that in the back of his mind, he wanted to forget about it as much as possible.
Yes.
I think he had very deep feelings and maybe regrets about what he has done for the world, or done to the world, in developing the bond. He was his father was an art collector, and I can still see the Van Gogh pictures hanging on the wall, first of his father's apartment in New York, and then later his apartment in Princeton. And I remember once hearing that he and Frank, his brother, had sold one of the pictures.
Do you have any recollections of his family, of Robert's family, his wife,
yes.
Their relationship?
The family was a tragic family. Not only did he die of cancer at a rather young age, but his wife died within a few years after that. His son, unfortunately, and I don't know why, never had the brains nearly like what Robert had. In fact, his intelligence was rather mediocre, and I can't imagine why. His daughter was a brilliant girl who tragically committed suicide a few years after Robert died.
So
not a very happy family.
No, and there's no family left?
I don't know anything about what his son is doing. I haven't heard of him for years.
And the brother?
His brother, Frank, after the war, before the war, the two of them had spent a great deal of time in New Mexico, and that's why they knew about this location of Los Alamos.
Mm-hmm.
And after the war, Frank went back and lived with his family in New Mexico. He had been a professor, but when it was found out that in his early days he had been a communist, at the age of 21, I think, he lost his teaching position. And that's when he went back to New Mexico. And then, a few years later, he was asked to do some teaching. And I forget which college. And then he became a professor again. And then later, he established an institute in California, which is, I've never seen, but which my family has seen and said is extremely interesting.
Do you know what kind of institute?
I once saw a museum in Chicago where you go around and press buttons and things happen.
Museum of Science and Industry.
A scientific museum of that sort.
Ah,
yeah.
All right. You mentioned the political difficulties for both men, certainly, which takes us, of course, to the time of the McCarthy era and so on. Do you have memories of that, Julian, of how it affected the political scene around us?
No.
Any sense of that
at
all?
I can't talk about that. I don't know enough about it.
What about...
I know what's been written about it.
But it didn't touch you in any personal way?
No.
You also mentioned earlier your time when you were on the NRA and traveled to Washington. Can you talk a bit about what the NRA was doing, what they were trying to accomplish?
Well, the NRA was trying to establish fair wages in all industries.
Right, but perhaps because it might not be clear to everybody, the acronym NRA stands for?
National Recovery Act.
Recovery Act.
That's it.
Right.
I lived it.
Right. All right. Can tell us about that, please? That's an interesting part of our history.
I have a very interesting story.
Please.
About one of my trips to the NRA meeting. Have I mentioned it before?
No, I wish you would.
I received a telegram stating that there was going to be a meeting in New York of the NRA, of our NRA group, the cigar group, in New York at 9 p.m. on a certain day. And I had made an appointment with one of my customers in Cleveland for that day. So I took the train to Cleveland, saw my customer, and got on a plane to go to New York. This was, of course, in the 1940s. The plane was an old Ford tri-motor, which was one of the first planes used by any of the airplane companies. I imagine the plane left in the late afternoon, I don't remember the exact time, and flew over western Pennsylvania. And after we'd been gone possibly half an hour, the pilot made an announcement that he had to make a landing in the mountains. And I looked down and I saw what looked like a postage stamp, which he had to land on. There were no airfields. So he circled and circled and circled, and I got sicker and sicker. And finally landed safely. And by the time he was ready to take off again on this strip, this airstrip, I managed to pull myself together enough to get back on the plane, although I was still pretty sick. We got to New York so that I was able to go to the meeting place and be there before 9 p.m. Unfortunately, there had been a slight error in the telegram, and the meeting had been held at 9 a.m. that day.
That's quite a memory of the NRA.
you turn it off.
Yeah. Now that. Go ahead.
Can you were telling us about your work on the NRA and some of the things that you tried to accomplish, that the agency tried to accomplish. Want to talk a little more about that?
I don't think so. I don't think that. I think. The NRA was established in order to try to have fair wages and hours for all industries, and I think our cigar industry went along with it very well, to such an extent that we had to go out of business eventually because the wages had been put too high. In making a two for a nickel stogie.
Are people making stogies now? Has the industry changed?
I think Mars still makes a few, that's all.
Yeah.
Did I mention the name stogie, where it came from?
Yes, you did indeed. You've seen the industry really change then during the years you were involved with it. The manufacturer changed.
Well, for one thing, it seems to me that the cigar smoking has declined very, very greatly. I think that in my youth and middle age, that almost all my friends smoked cigars. I know hardly anyone today that smokes a cigar.
Why do you think that is?
I think that it was mainly due to the fact that we didn't get Havana tobacco anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And the substitutes evidently weren't as fine as Havana tobacco. I quit smoking many years ago, and so I can't speak from my own knowledge of what happened to the cigar industry, but I think that that had a great deal to do with it. The people that smoked good cigars weren't getting as good a smoke as they had before Cuba became communist.
Hmm.
What else do you want to know?
Well, I know one of the great pleasures of your life has been the traveling that you've done. We thought you might like to talk about some of the unusual places in the world you've seen.
If you think.
Oh, yes. When we turn the tape, because I'd hate to interrupt that now. How about a fragmentary question? What year are we talking about the NRA, for example? What years was that in effect?
It started. When did Roosevelt become president? 1932.
Yeah.
The NRA went into effect in 1933, I think. And the AAA, also the agricultural part. I mean, he tried to do something to get this country out of the Depression.
That's when the banks failed, right? When he took over.
Yes, I remember. I'll tell you another story. Mm-hmm. On one occasion, my wife and I were in Canada, in Quebec.
Mm-hmm.
I was staying at the Chateau Frontenac, and we had had a very nice dinner, and then word came on the radio, I presume, that the banks had closed.
All the banks across the country?
Yeah, that's right.
You mean Roosevelt closed them? President Roosevelt.
I don't know that
ordered
they closed. They closed anyway.
Yeah.
And I remember saying to my wife at dinner, "Dear, which would you rather have, some wine at dinner or breakfast the next morning? Because I'm going to run out of money and the banks are closed." Fortunately,
this is perfect.
I received money by wire the next day from our business in Pittsburgh. But I still remember the shock we had when we heard the banks had closed.
Yes.
That was in 33.
1933.
Did you and your friends talk very much about Roosevelt and the effect of his government? What was the feeling that you and your friends had about the man?
Well, I was a staunch Republican and he was a Democrat, and I didn't like him very much. Now I do, but at that time, I don't think I ever voted for him.
That was rather rare for a Jewish person of that period, wasn't it? Wasn't the Jewish community particularly supportive of Roosevelt? Did you have that sense?
No, I don't remember that. I really don't.
Why have you changed your mind about him in retrospect?
Well, in retrospect, I'm quite sure that what he did was great, but at that time,